Zals, I know cricket's not your game, but theatre is your game. Newlands, 20,000 sellout, SA20 final, an incredible occasion, a wonderful finish. The sun rises, four finals, three wins. They're getting something right there. Inspirational coach, Adrian A.D. Birrell. But the joy of watching that last five overs was to know you can watch an incredible game of cricket, incredible sporting occasion in your own city, and you don't have a home team playing there, so you can't lose. Contrast that to the night before when three big Sharks came knocking at our door. Kudos to the Sharks, JP Peterson, Marco Mazzotti, and to Andre the Giant, Esther Raisin, the three big dogs that came knocking in the guise of the Sharks and absolutely slaughtered the myth that the Stormers were untouchable at the DHL Stadium in front of 52,000, officially 54,000, season ticket holders included. A great win for the Sharks, 14th on the table. I'd said in my preview that the Sharks would lose 32-19. I got the scores right, I got the teams wrong. And when you reflect on that game, and I know you would have done a lot more analysis than I have, it's part of your job, you had to go to the HBC. There was one team that definitely came first on Saturday. One came poor second. The beauty is, in 6 days' time, they meet again. And they get the chance, the Stormers, to redeem themselves. The Sharks get the chance to make another emphatic statement to say 14th to 11th into the top eight. And we are back before the break. But an incredibly important win for the Sharks.
Very much so, mate. In terms of dominance, it was Morningside Primary School that dominated in the mid-80s, the under-11s, mate. We had a fast bowler by the name of Tyron McFarlane. Nobody could bat with this guy. Eventually, they sent the newspaper down. I think in one match, he took 7 wickets for something like 11 runs. It was ridiculous. They sent the newspaper guys down. They took a photograph of us all. I was a complete passenger in that team. Didn't bat well. Could only bowl creepers. And whenever the ball came our way at gully, I was looking somewhere else. So wasn't much of a cricketer, mate. And I think what drove me away from it was we had like a team ball box. So a couple of games into it, I was like, you know, I can't really run singles because I'm not putting that in me underpants. Cricket wasn't really my forte. Kind of lost interest in it after that. But getting back to last weekend, disappointing result. Fantastic effort by the Sharks. Produced, I think, maybe their best performance of the season. Were in control of the collisions. Just played outstanding rugby. Andre the Giant stood tall. Key players came through. In all the big moments, they did what they do. So I'm sure that that is a game that they are celebrating and should be celebrating. Fantastic performance. Bad day at the office for the Stormers. Back to the drawing board. Things that need to be fixed. Thank goodness we play them again this week. We don't have to wait till next season or next month to try and put things right. And very excited about this weekend's game.
Great sporting occasion. DHL Stadium was humming. A wonderful atmosphere there. I think about going there, you always bump into Oaks and saw McNeil Hendricks.
Still looking like a good player, mate.
Still looking like McNeil Hendricks, who was destroying Western Province playing for Boerland back in the day. He had a wonderful two seasons, became a Springbok. Just a wonderful individual. And also, for those who don't know, played Chester Williams in the movie Invictus, which always confused me because I wondered why they didn't just get Chester to play Chester because he was still around and still playing.
I don't think that's how it works in the movies.
But I know your mate,
Chester Williams, as
I know
himself.
Your mate Richie Trefell, as he was an extra. Eh?
Richie Abramson, yeah, he was there. He a couple of guys. I think he was Joost and one of the England players in that movie.
Yeah.
Dale Dunn, who played for Province as a loose head prop, he was in that movie. I think he might have been Os Durant. Quite a few blokes we know were in that movie.
Yeah, so McNeil Hendricks, nice to see him. You see a lot of the ex-players there, a lot of the ex-administrators, ex-coaches, and obviously, first time in a long time, caught up with Braden Paulser, staying out in Culls River now, where I was born, my old hood, junior school, and then into Durbanville, and when I went to high school. He says he's given up golf. He's now a cyclist.
He's also looking good. He could run.
Yeah. No, he's looking good and looking happy, but he, like me, he was a lot happier before kickoff. And like me, he wasn't that happy afterwards. Although Gavin Rich, he can never lose when the Stormers play the Sharks. Because Gav's whole career, for those who don't know, started in Durban.
Yep.
Gav has never lost that love for the Sharks. and he's an adopted Stormer. We know he comes to the ground dressed in both colors and then hedges his bets. But I think, you know, it's one thing to lose a game and to be disappointed if you just feel like you threw a game away. And I think when you go back to last season, the way the Stormers played against the Bulls, and then Clayton Blomaker's missed that kick from right in front of the poles, and it would have given them an incredible win at 40,000 plus at the DHL Stadium. And then Marcel Kutsia, I still found that odd when he said he thought they closed the game out well. And well, you're under the post waiting for a guy to either connect with a conversion or miss it.
Yeah.
And if it connects, you've lost the game that you were comfortably ahead. But there was something inspiring about that performance, even though that the Stormers lost. And you walked away thinking, wow, you guys weren't given much chance with that power scrum and that. But you look at a game like Saturday, as disappointed as I was, you just had to say to the Sharks, well done. Well done totally. For fronting. Well done for pitching.
Yeah.
And Andre Esterhazy and Andre the Giant, just, wow, the transformation in that guy's presence. We've been saying it since basically he nearly got decapitated in 2018, it was, by Owen Farrell, and it should have been a penalty and the chance to beat England. We lost that game 12-11. But Andre the Giant was sensational at Harlequins. He was good at the Sharks, but never quite was the Damien Deerlandy presence at test level. And then Russi found this hybrid role for him as a flanker, back into the centres. And we've spoken at length about this in previous shows. Just the toughness that he's acquired in terms of the physicality and the close contact, playing in that hybrid flank role. The minute he plays center, he's looking like a man among boys.
Yeah.
And so confident in how he takes the tackle, how he breaks the tackle, the yardage he makes. But his all-round game, he scored incredible maul try. Coming in there, and he was like the decisive play. It was like one of the great locks of world rugby, coming in and taking their ball and going through. He was outstanding in defense.
Yeah.
He reeled in Lionel Zas. I said it looked like he had jet shoes and Paul Zassi had got into some quicksand there. It's a wonderful cover tackle. At a time, that could have swung a bit of momentum early in the game. And then the end, he was taking the touch kicks. I mean, the only thing he didn't do was take a conversion.
Yeah.
It was just an outstanding performance. He's going to be on the cover of the next SA Rugby magazine.
Good choice, mate.
Simon Borchard was particularly pleased. I've been asked to write the cover feature, so it's a nice feature to write when a guy plays like that. And he's really a guy who's given Russi options. I think he's put Damien Deerlandy, who's been playing well in Japan, also maybe gives him that extra impetus to say, you know, I've got something extra in my legs. But to see them come to Cape Town, play with that dogged enthusiasm, that dogged spirit, I think that's what we've been saying has been lacking with the Sharks under Plumtree.
Mm.
They look like they're playing for each other, and they look like they're playing for a coach.
Yeah, and they also look like they're playing with clarity. Like, you know, Jordan Hendrickson, we've been wondering, when is this guy going to find the sort of rediscover the form that got us so excited about him? And we've been wondering, when are the Sharks going to settle on a 10 that can actually drive them around the field like they want to? And they played on Saturday with great conviction. And the great thing about that is, even when you make bad decisions, or not the best decision, when you do it with clarity and conviction, you can still pull it off sometimes. Sometimes he's a guy that auditions at Pop Idol who can't really sing, but he sings with such conviction, and his enthusiasm and his theatrics around it maybe convinces a judge, okay, we'll send him through the next round and then we'll slaughter him there. So there's something about the Sharks now. They are playing with a direction and a purpose, and I think that that's helping them in a big way. And I think Andre Esterhazy is key to that. We've spoken about it before. Moving into the back row, which is where a couple of people said he should maybe be trialed, is actually, I think, giving him greater context around his role in the back line. And I think for a large part of his career, he was kind of apologizing for being a big guy and trying to prove that he's actually not just the big guy, he's a skillful guy too. I think that's taken away a lot of opportunities for him, because he is a massive dude and he has a massive skill set for a guy that size. And when he applies his physical skill set, his ability sort of physically, it creates opportunities for him to use his skills in a way that is deadly. And you saw his left foot come into play at Cape Town Stadium. And obviously, you know, he's a guy who can win in the collisions. I mean, the Stormers had to really commit resources to stopping him at times. And then he can pass the ball. So he's been, his sort of revival, rediscovering, I suppose, his love for the game, or just finding his best way to engage with the game, has been central to the Sharks' resurgence under JP.
Dobbo, when he walked into the press conference, looked like he'd been hit by a sledgehammer. Obviously wasn't happy.
Mm.
Spoke about it being collectively the worst performance of the season as far as he's concerned, given the strength of the side, the occasion, 50,000+ people willing them on, and the derby element, coastal derby, mate against mate. You must get up for that. It's just one of those things in South Africa. It's not a game you need motivation for. But he said what really annoyed him the most and frustrated him was the first two attacks, one from a scrum and one from a line-out in the first 6 minutes of the game, that Andre the Giant was given so much time and so much space, and they made 40 meters, both times. And that kind of passiveness, he said, frustrated him. Now, obviously, that's not in the coaching manual. That's not what you guys kind of set out to do. How do you explain that to the lay observer that was at the ground or the guy watching at home on telly?
Well, I think there's probably two sides to that. One is that the Sharks would have prepared for the Stormers knowing how the Stormers play. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to use your opponents, what they think are their strengths, against them. So maybe if a team has massive line speed or is reckless, you try and create opportunities for your guys to be in the pockets and play out the back to get around that, or play over the top to get around that. That may have been contributed to it. And I think also the Sharks got the rubber, the green at the set piece, you know. The line-out and the scrum were two things that surprisingly they dominated in that game, and that would have given them the initiative and momentum. So all of those strike plays were played off that sort of a base, which I think would have been a surprise.
When you say they got the rubber, the green, I mean, you've done 2 days of analysis and that. I try to watch the game over again, but I fast-forwarded it until the 79th minute when there was a Stormers try. But do you feel that there were calls that could have gone either way on the day, and on another day, another match official, it goes the way of the Stormers?
I think in every rugby match, you could debate calls until the cows come home. I mean, that's just the nature of the game. And then in any instance where a scrum penalty is awarded, you think, if you're the team that is being penalised, you think, well, that's a bit harsh. And if you're the team that got it, you think, yeah, that's right. So I think that is always the case. The referees are in an impossible position. I would say it's impossible for a rugby referee to be 100% accurate in a game. And even if you watch stuff in slow-mo replay, you could split a room of 50 people probably three different ways in terms of decisions. So that is the nature of rugby. Technically, there are things that we'll have to improve to make sure that the calls go our way when we play again in Durban. But on the day, the Sharks got it right. They painted the right pictures and the referee calls went their way, and then they benefited from that. So that is the nature of rugby.
And again, just repeating what Dobbo said at the press conference, a dejected Dobbo. Didn't even stumble over to give me a hug. I said, you can't win and give me a hug and then you lose and you don't want to give me a hug. Then I was reminded of a Hugh Bladen story. When his mate gave a speech at the Wanderers, it was terrible performance. And he sat down at the table and Blades looked at him and just said, shocker! That's what I said to Dobbo, shocker! I love the Stormers, but it was a shocker. Okay. There's no other way of looking at it. In Afrikaans, they say, you moet jou pak vat and come back the next week a bit stronger. Dit was a beer club gewees. And maybe it's what the Stormers need as well. They've been kind of on the brink of, there's been in different performances.
Mm.
The La Rochelle, incredible for the first 15 minutes. Didn't look good for the last hour. We were there at the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium. Then sending a second string side to Harlequins and getting whipped. Not overly convincing against Leicester Tigers. Not overly convincing against the Lions a couple of weeks before that. And certainly not convincing in a brutal game against the Bulls, but got the win. So he didn't agree with me when I said it's been coming for a while. But again, as an observer looking in, you tend to see things sometimes that you guys too close to the action don't see, because one is blinded by loyalty. One is blinded by kind of the mentality of we all bandied together. But, you know, he spoke about accuracy again. He spoke about good decision making. He didn't felt the Stormers overplayed. He didn't feel that they were trying to be fancy or they're trying to be. He spoke a lot about the five lineouts lost, but and then qualified it by saying, if you looked at the Stormers, URC, 8 matches unbeaten, lineout percentages and scrum percentages in the top two of the competition. Then to get a 67% return and where they lost the five lineouts, three good contestables, we say contestables, it wasn't even contestable. They just read it. I mean, they got up and caught the ball in front of the Stormers jumper, and then two skew throws that they contested. But how does one fix accuracy? Isn't that a player mindset thing, a mentality?
Mm.
The regard for the pull, as they say, down under, a respect for it, don't give it away.
No, look, I think that's definitely a contributing factor. I think in pro rugby, the technically speaking, the margins are very, very narrow. So the difference between taking your own ball in the middle of the lineouts and having it poached is in how you set it up. So the previous couple of lineouts that you had, what sort of picture did you show? Did you set up this lineout to be successful in how you physically set up for that lineout? Are you giving away where the ball's going? There are lots of technical issues that go into it, but the media is generally right on this stuff. As a guy who's been in the media for a long time, the media is generally right on this stuff, even if not always for the right technical reason. The outcome is the reality. You have to win your own lineout ball. And especially if you've got an attacking lineout, you've got to convert those into tries. So the bottom line is we got good opportunities, but we didn't convert them. And in every game that you win, you don't turn around and say, well, if we hadn't taken our opportunities, we could have lost this game. And so when you lose a game, you can't really say, if we had taken our opportunities, we would have won this game. Because that's part. If I was 2 foot taller, I could dunk a basketball, but I can't. So again, we have an opportunity to turn it around this week, and I'm sure we will. I'm hoping we will. And that's great. For me, the learning here is that you've got to be able to be, and this is the tough thing in sport, right? It's easy to say it, and again, I always talk about PlayStation rugby. It's easy to be at your best every single time on PlayStation rugby because it's a game that just runs on binary numbers. There's no human element to it. But for a player to be up and focused and on points and at the best of his ability throughout a 12-month season is an impossibility. So you just got to make sure that your team is in contention to be in the playoffs. And then you've got to make sure that when you get to the playoff stage, there is no next week if you don't win. So at that point, you've got to be able to be sharp, on point, and execute, because otherwise your season is over. And I think that's finding the sort of the coping for between pacing yourself to be at your best at the sharp end of the season, but be good enough in the season to get there is coaching. That's the challenge.
Okay, so you're central to the number crunching, the data, the analyzing the data, and what you give the coaches. When you look at this first matchup of the two that you guys are going to have against the Sharks, was there any aspect of the Sharks play that surprised you, given how they've played all season? Two wins from 8 and one draw pre that game in the league, out of the Investec Champions Cup and into the Challenge Cup. By the way, they don't play Cardiff, so thanks for everyone pointing it out to me. They go away to who? That's exactly it. Read the comments, but it's not Cardiff, okay? It's Connacht and go away.
It's got a C in it.
In front of that new Flash Stadium. Now it takes 12,500.
Yeah.
A little bit, it's 2,000 less than Bishop's. It's main stadium, but that's fine. But Charles Krauss was there. He said it was a wonderful occasion. He said he wished he was in Cape Town, but he was there in Galway. So the things you've got to go through, the CEO of the United Rugby Championship. You can't come to Cape Town, you've got to go to Galway for the opening of their new stand when they played Leinster.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I wouldn't say there's anything that surprised me, but before the game I said to you, these guys can scrum and they've got the best contesting lineout in the URC. And both of those things came to the fore on the day. And those are two obviously areas that the Stormers are very strong in as well. So the Sharks did their homework and they got the jump on us on Saturday. Now it's our job to turn that around this week. So their defense has improved under JP. And I thought in those moments in the game where it's 50-50 and it could go either way, you know, like, so for example, Grant Williams stepping into the blind and then going up the wing there and creating a sticky situation. In those moments, they were at their best. The Sharks really fired in those moments and took their opportunities, and they deserve credit for that.
And Sasha, again, quoting from the press conference, said that they played the big moments better.
Mm.
He said that you take on the chin and you hope to be better at the next week. And a lot of people also talking about the conditioning afterwards. And like the Stormers looked more lethargic, they looked a bit flatter. And that question was put to him. And he spoke about 80 meter reversals and what it does to you on the field. And he spoke honestly and with great articulation to say you're 50 meters from the try line, the lineup goes skew, Fussy puts in, and Andre plays to the wide channel. Fussy on the angle puts in the most incredible 60-meter kick. You're thinking you're about to go score from the line out. You're chasing back. Three of you fumble the ball. You're 5 meters from your try line. It gets hoofed out. He says you do look a bit exhausted when you stand there. So
that's a very valid point, Matt. That's something we've spoken about before. And in rugby, if you ask me my personal opinion, nothing drains you more than having to react. If you are in a team where you are reacting to what's happening all the time, instead of in control and dictating terms, for me, that's a major energy sapper because your body is almost in shock state. You're constantly having to catch up. You're having to accelerate to put out fires or accelerate to take advantage of opportunities. Whereas if you're in a team that's very, very controlled, and you're dictating terms throughout the facets of the game, you're controlling the scrum, controlling the lineout, controlling the breakdown, then there is no surprises. You know what's coming next, and you are already halfway to your destination by the time the ball's in the air. And I think that's the disparity between being in control of the game and not being in control of the game. And I think you can see it. People will say it's the conditioning, but like Sasha was saying, when you think you're about to score and you're in the middle of your attack play and suddenly you're 75 meters back defending a 50-22, that takes it out of you.
And he also said in the context of the game, inaccuracy has been an issue with him. And maybe that's wanting to overplay. And when I say overplay, I'm talking about force the first pass or try and make the miracle pass or kind of the offload when it's just take the contact and go to ground. But he said in most games, it would be a knock on back straight away. So you kind of concede the scrum or the guy kicks it out 40, 20 meters and you get to attack again. He said it felt like it was times five every time. The punishment for the mistake was really big in the field advantage that the Sharks got.
That's a great shot, yeah.
And I think credit there to the Andre Estrans of the world and Apele Fassi. I thought he was outstanding.
He was great.
The banana 50-22 was brilliant. It was glorious to watch. If you're an independent and you just love the game, you see execution like that.
And he's kicking with his left foot. Can you imagine if he kicked with his right, how good it would be?
Yeah. Well, but he could have jumped as well. I mean, he's a bit taller than you. But what I liked about his game is his defense has improved immeasurably. And he stood up bravely and strongly in a lot of context situations.
Yeah.
I remember in his first year of Test rugby, that was the one concern that he tended to be a little bit generous when he heard the hoofs of the opposition.
Well, my mom refers to him as the guy who could have been a model. So, I mean, like, because he's so good looking. So she says, yeah, but that guy is the way that he played, he really took control of the game and stuff. So, yeah, the way my mom speaks about him, and I think that's probably the way that he played originally was he was quite sort of good in the finesse moments, but maybe not so much in the tough stuff. And on the weekend, he really got stuck in.
Yeah, I know. Your mom obviously knows the game. She knows a good-looking guy when she sees him as well. Your mom must have told me you're particularly good-looking.
As always.
You could have been a model as well. And a basketball player.
The under-5-foot-8 model.
And a basketball player. But I look at Fassi, Pepsi Boudelezi. I thought he was outstanding. One of the kind of form games that got him a Springbok call-up a couple of years ago. Nick Hatton was good at 8. Jason Jenkins just showed us he's still had a little bit of fight in him. But what would have been pleasing for the Sharks was Sia was introduced on the 49th minute.
Yep.
There was no Bongi there.
Yep.
You know, it was people weren't speaking about the big established Springboks. They were talking about...
And I mean, he went off with that hammy.
Yeah.
You know?
They were talking about, obviously, Andre Esterhuis and just how he led, but also about just the group that collectively did so well. Jan Jaco Williams on the win, looked comfortable, looked like he belonged there. Excellent talent from the SA Under 20 program. And I just thought all around it was just an outstanding effort from the Sharks. And you've just got to give them the praise. You've got to say to JP, to Warren Whiteley, you've got to say to the coaching staff, to the leadership, it was a great performance and the kind of performance you want to see. You know, we always say we need more from the Bulls. We're happy to see the Lions. They just need to close our games. But to see the Sharks show that fire and that mongrel, it was at the expense of the beloved Stormers, but it was a great performance.
Spot on.
As you say, they do get to go again next week in the return. We've got the Lions against the Bulls in another great derby. The Bulls, 2-point win again. Pollard makes the conversion that matters. 17-5 down, 1970 wins. And then the Lions, the enigma of the tournament, the enigma of any tournament. How do you back up a 20-all draw in dogged conditions in Papillon in the south of France and then go to Wales and back it up with another 20 all. I mean, what would the bookies have put on that? So,
what are the bookies putting on another draw this weekend, mate?
Just for the Lions. They're a side that you just never know what to get from them, but they seem to be on the cusp of something.
They are right there, mate. The Lions are close, I'm telling you. And the fact that they came back into that game and almost won it is a very good sign for them. It's not a fourth quarter fade. They're starting to play to the full 80 minutes. Gutted for Angelo. He was right there, mate. He could have made it to hell of a difficult conditions, full speed in horizontal rain. But yeah, the Lions are very, very close. Chris Smith is finding some of his form again and looking at...
Sacks old boy.
He's looking dangerous. I teed you up there, mate.
Thanks. Sacks old boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Brother Daniel Smith, he's a very good cricketer. He's been in the extended protest squad as well.
There you go.
So Chris Smith...
Back to cricket, mate.
Yeah, Memorial Field. Good kicker, played for Martyrs in the Varsity Cup for 4 years. I think won two titles there. Jake got him. He went to Pumas, Bulls, went overseas to France. A very good acquisition for the Lions.
Very.
Old head and understands. He understands pressure points, he understands field dynamics. What he lacks with a half a yard of pace, he makes up with the rugby intelligence.
Correct. Well Sachs said. Boy. Well said.
I don't know if I told you, I went to Sachs.
Where did you go to school?
Sachs.
Sachs.
Yeah, South African College School, Newlands. You may have heard of it. Oldest school in the country.
Yeah, so back to you, mate.
Last time they produced a test, Springbok was Monty.
Well, they chose a great one, mate.
Yeah, they chose the only one
you
that matters.
Break the mold after yeah, that.
The only one that matters. First ever recorded Springbok, Ben Duff, alphabetical order. First ever test centurion.
They named the beer after him.
First ever test centurion, Percy Montgomery. Sachs. They control both of them. Had some good sevens players come through, some good provincial players. But yeah, Chris Smith doing well there. Obviously, Klappies is there. And a lot of people rating Nico Steyn as well. Can play 9, he can play 10. Got Jan Piet. But I like their pack. I like their mongrel. It's just, they also need a bit of luck. Eh?
They need a bit of luck, mate. But yeah, they're starting to create their own luck. They're playing, like you say, intelligent rugby. It's putting in the right parts of the field. And some of their natural flair is given more and more opportunity to kind of strike. And I think that the Lions are very close to clicking.
But if you look at these derbies, and I'm sure it's going to be a big crowd in Durban. I'd love to think there's going to be at least 20,000 Ellis Park for the Bulls against the Lions. It's two cracking derbies, and it just shows how healthy rugby is in this country, that we can get those kind of crowds. And yeah, people talk about the Bulls-Stormers game, and it wasn't a great advertisement for rugby. I thought it was fabulous in the brutality in that first 40 minutes, 78th minute, the game gets decided. It's kind of what you want in a contest. But guys outside of the Springbok squad, say, are 40, are performing, and they're performing well, and they're pushing these Springboks that are based in this country, and they can only be good for the World Cup preparations, be good for the tour that's coming against the All Blacks, the greatest rivalry tour. Four tests in 4 weeks, one of them in America. And you've just got to think we do have more depth than them, but it's showing up in the way our teams are playing and also these domestic derbies.
Yeah, no, 100%, mate. The URC is a very, very challenging competition league. And similar to the Champions Cup, just the length and breadth of it, the travel involved. It's a hell of a thing to keep everybody up and at their best the whole way while you're still building depth and coping with injuries. So it is brutal. I think back-to-back South African derbies, we're going to see the toll of that potentially this week. I know the Sharks have got some injuries that they're busy dealing with. And then we've got the Lions and Bulls go at it at Ellis Park. That's going to be another brutal game at altitude, probably a high-speed one. It is brutal. It is difficult. For me, the competition is producing some great clashes. And this weekend in particular, some really interesting lineups. Aside from the South African derbies, you've got Glasgow hosting Munster. You've got Ulster, Cardiff. Those are near top of the table. They influence the log, I think. Some cracking lineup.
Yeah, and I mean, this weekend was a very interesting week in the URC. And just before, when you arrived here, obviously from your morning drills at the High Performance Centre in Bellville with the Stormers, I said to you, do you think a lot of these results or the kind of closeness of a lot of matches, not just in the URC, in the top 14 and in the Prem, were based on teams coming out of the Investec Champions Cup who had put a lot of effort into round four to qualify? And I look at the Stormers, and they had to put in effort to beat Leicester, despite the team that Leicester bought. Harlequins especially. Harlequins were incredible in winning against La Rochelle. And then we find themselves 34-0 down at home against the full-strength Leicester side and lost 34-7. Crowds were leaving beforehand. You look at Northampton, who put in a big effort. 36-29 up against Sal. They scored near the end to make create a bit of a buffer. In the URC, Zebre nearly undid Glasgow at home, where people thought that would be a gimme by 20 points. You looked at the Welsh clubs. They were fighting for survival to make a point. Ulster losing to the Scarlets. The Ospreys obviously getting the draw. Cardiff beating, what was Cardiff that beat Benetton.
Yeah.
It was just, there was something in the air in terms of the results. And then Dragons going and leading Munster and Cork for 78 minutes. And just coming unstuck in the end there with a late penalty. So this tournament is a bit like the Investec Champions Cup. You can, you got to play 18 rounds to see if you make the top eight or you get the top four and you host, and you're going to host a quarterfinal and potentially semifinal. And because it's played in pockets, you don't get that 5-6 match surge easily in the beginning to go on a roll.
Yeah. And I mean, the point that you're making there about the travel and the rotation of squads, the players understand that much more keenly than you and I do. They know what it's like to come back from a huge game on the road and have to pick yourself up the next week for a game. And also they know what it's like to have been rested specifically to catch a team that's bouncing back from Europe or bouncing back from a big game and catch them when they potentially mentally and physically fatigued. So I don't think there's any coincidence in that sort of stuff. I think definitely that is a factor. And that is why sometimes selections don't always make sense, because you're not picking your very best players to play a particular game. I think there are times where you've got to consider what is that sort of season-long plan around getting your best players in, but also getting them when they're at their sharpest to do damage for a particular fixture. It's a hell of a juggling act. So both teams are coming off this game in Cape Town. The Sharks, it felt like they held some guys back to make sure they were ready for this one, and they got just reward for that. And now they go again this week in Durban. The Lions are coming back from overseas. The Bulls are in a similar situation. And it's at Ellis Park. It's just down the road for both of them. It's basically a home game for both of them. Whoever's brave enough to go to Doornfontein for this one. It's another exciting South African derby weekend, mate.
And how often have we seen in the South African derbies, and specifically when it comes to Bulls and Lions and Sharks and Stormers, or when Sharks played Province in the Currie Cup, when the team plays at home and they're favourites, they lose, and they go away from home.
Exactly.
They're not favourites and they win.
Yeah.
Often the two matches have been split by away wins. So they find something, they find an extra gear when they get on the plane and they take that 2-hour flight.
But that's a South African mentality, is we love to be like the underdogs written off. Can you guys prove? We hate to be in a situation where you the favourites, show them what you're made of. Like, we respond well to being written off. And if you're the Bulls going to Ellis Park, or if you're the Sharks coming to Cape Town, you're like, oh, we've been written off. The home crowd is going to be a sellout. Nobody expects us to win, or the odds are against us. Let's go and spoil their party. That really is a driving force, I think, in the South African rugby mindset.
And I mean, where does Aka sit when he gets there? They got to point you to the right. So visiting change room and visiting coach's box. Does he go left? Does he go right? But looking at the Bulls, fantastic signing announced a couple of days ago. Andre Liebenberg. 139 matches for Leicester, captained them. A lot of people saying that one of the big surprises has been that he was never even considered for English selection because he qualified. He played five games for Stade when Heineke Meyer went there, and then when Heineke left, he went to Leicester with Heineke. 45 games for the Bulls. He's also played for the famous Barbarians once, but he's coming back 30 years old. He really adds to their stock and their leadership. So a very good signing for the Bulls. I just like the squad that they're building.
Where are they going to play all these guys?
Yeah, but the interesting thing, and I sent that to you and a few other people on the weekend, 14 of the current Bulls squad all come out of Parler / Stellenbosch.
How many from Sachs?
There used to be one, Chris Smith. But he's now gone, okay? But what a feeder.
Massive, man.
Just shows you the incredible talent that gets produced in the Western Cape.
But also, mate, you can't keep all of those guys, you know? Like, if you the Stormers or Western Province, whatever.
You can't, but I wouldn't mind if Captain Curtly Aronson and Kane and Moody just as two starting
players. Yeah.
We know Vili LaRue travelled all over. But, yeah, some just wonderful talent. Then Cam Hunnicombe, not a bad one either. But that has come out of and continues to come out of the Western Cape. That makes for just incredible resources for our professional teams. So, yeah, I just thought it was a fabulous weekend of rugby. You know, I always go down the rabbit hole looking for those fights. Couldn't believe I found one from the Waratahs training session.
Glorious. Wow.
And also, this guy was 18 years old, grew up in Australia. He went to Clermont at 18. I can't pronounce his name because I can't remember it.
Yeah.
But he's now 24, and then he got on the training field, and he kind of clocked Scott Jan, clocked him in the training. Scott Young's dad, who was a Wallaby, has come out and challenged this kid to a fight and called him a dirtbag. And, you know, fighting at a training ground is normally the essence of a team that's going to do well in the competition.
Because
if you can beat up your teammate, you have no problems giving it to the opposition. I mean, the great All Black teams, these Springbok teams, the South African teams that have always been at the best, you've always known that there's been a scuffle or 12 at training. There wasn't a scuffle at 12. Where's the passion? Where's the emotion?
Mate, I don't think it would stand up in court anyway, because mitigation is Scotty Young is an Australian. How can you not want to punch an Australian, mate?
That's true.
Just par for the court. Horse.
I think they sighted him from a training field. Only in Australia.
Only in Australia, mate.
But talking about that, I see they're promoting the World Cup 2027. They're getting all the people on to say who's going to be in the final, who's going to win it. Bit disappointed with Dan Carter.
In what way?
Australia, New Zealand, mate. You know I want to win. No one. Oh, there was the odd guy that said Springboks, I think, could be in the final against Australia. Everyone's Australia in the final.
Australia's not. It's all part of just promoting it. They want to get the Australians down to watch it. Obviously, Australia won't be anywhere near
Eddie
the final.
Eddie Jones thinks they could be in the final. He may be there.
That means I'm really negative.
Joe Smith has said, no, I'm not going to be involved with the All Blacks. To see through my contract and my association with the Wallabies. Even though he leaves the Wallabies officially in July, and Les Kiss takes over, he will stay involved as an advisor in that, and he felt it was unethical mid-cycle to go over. I think Tony Brown's saying the same. Unethical mid-cycle. I see SA Rugby, according to Ronald Rolzer, have thrown the checkbook at the assistant.
Which is weird. You wouldn't have to do that if you were sticking around.
One Tony Brown till 2031. Yeah, I don't think they'll get him till 2031. I think they'll keep him till 2027. A lot of talk because New Zealand Rugby Union is finally having axed the guy who they said come. Did you hear the story about his review?
No.
Scott Robertson.
Tell me.
So there was a review that he wasn't aware of who was involved in the review. Wayne Smith wasn't involved because they felt he would soften the blows, the professor.
Already you can tell where this is going.
Then on the Tuesday, he got a call to go to New Zealand Rugby Union offices and bring an employment lawyer with you. And then on Thursday, he was fired.
Just for the talk.
Thursday, he was fired, okay?
Listen.
So, but you don't fire someone if you don't have a replacement. So now they start in the search for a replacement. But how's the actual brief? Is you have to be a New Zealander who has been a head coach of an international team.
Your first name must start with the same letter as your surname.
So there's basically two options there.
Jamie Joseph
and Dave
Clark Rennie. Kent.
Oh. And Dave Rennie.
Yeah.
Logically, because I don't think Graham Henry's coming out of retirement. I don't think they're going to go for Wayne Smith. The prof is there in advisor capacity. Steve Hansen has lost 18 out of 24 in Japan.
I don't think Shaq's
coming back.
Nah.
Too close for Fozzie to make a return. We saw what happened with Gats when he came back to the Waikato. The minute he left, they won a game again.
Where's Bobby Deans?
And Robbie Deans looking at the thing saying, you know, I don't know. It's quite nice in Japan where he wins every year, every second year with these Wild Knights.
Yeah.
So it's down to, and the first thing the blokes asked Dave Rennie in Japan is, are you taking the job? And Brady Retallick, who addressed the media, said something weird. That's what the clickbait got me. Weird. Brady Retallick has a weird reaction to Dave Rennie.
And what was the weird reaction?
He was non-committal. He didn't give away much. He didn't say yes. He didn't say no.
Wow. Dave Rennie would be my choice.
Yeah, and I think Jamie Joseph without Tony Brown is not quite the same.
It's like Batman and without Robin, mate.
I think Dave Rennie, but I think they've got the eyes set on Jamie Joseph when they brought him in to do the All Blacks 15.
It's like Cheech without Chong.
Exactly, yeah. We can go on all night. Eh? Sonny and Scher, Laurel and Hardy. Who else do you want?
Continue.
JP and Brian
Abana.
Oh, apparently the weirdest question. I wasn't at that early part of the press conference, maybe because I didn't want to front the Sharks. No, I was busy writing the match report. I did get to see JP in the foyer and congratulate him and just say well done in person. But apparently the first question he was asked was, would you employ Brian Abana at the Sharks as your assistant coach? Why? Because you make a great wing combination. I mean, it's absurd. Get some kind of get some decorum going there at the media conferences and get the bystanders out there and get the real journalists like Steve Annell and Gavin Rich to ask questions.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just the New Zealand thing we're watching with interest. I know there was a big media day with Rassi and some of the leading publications today out at the SA Rugby offices. Plans for the year, we'll find out from Hendrik Hunier. Gav was going there, was my proxy to bring me back all the information.
I thought Gav would be halfway to Derbs in the Nissan X-Trail.
Gav is going to Derbs. He's torn between going to Arniston and Derbs, he told me. It was Anna's birthday.
Oh, congrats.
But then I haven't seen Gav as happy for a while as I saw him at Hammy's when we had a few drinks and Timmy Sweel popped in to say hello to us.
Nice.
He's got another year to go in the States. Had a wonderful chat. Intelligent lad. A very good fly-off in his day. Played at Harlequins. Played for the Stormers. Played for Province. Kind of played under Brendan Fenty. He said, was it Saracens or Harlequins? I think he played at both. But he said he played under Brendan Fenty. I think coming back here. Then played under Dobbo. Clash of Styles. But we had a great chat. But Gav was beaming the whole night because his Sharkies had actually won.
Really?
And he's a guy who doesn't lose when the Sharks play against the Stormers. But for those who did make it to the DHL Stadium, Zales and I were there in a professional capacity. But it was really an incredible vibe. And the one thing that I have found out about Cape Townians, rugby supporters, which I do love as well, is it's a sporting occasion at the DHL Stadium now. It's the festivities were there afterwards. Everywhere you went, guys were like, we'll get them next week. The Sharks guys were, we got to be good to beat you guys next week. It was a really cool vibe, and there were a lot of Shark supporters there as well. So that was cool to watch as well.
No, it was great.
The party went on, like early hours of the morning, regardless of the result.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that is what makes going to a game at the DHL Stadium cool. It's not dependent on a result, but I do believe the mood can get swayed by a performance.
Yeah.
And I think what the rugby public just wants always is a bit more rugby intelligence from the Stormers. Because no one ever doubts the commitment of that team. They play for 82 minutes. The desire for them to make people smile. But I did feel, Zales, that they made me cry a bit on Saturday night. I don't know if they made you cry.
They're going to make you laugh on Saturday, mate.
Are they going to make me laugh or are they going to make me smile?
Both.
Because you know the donkey story, eh?
Don't tell it.
I won't tell that one. So we don't want to make the donkey laugh and cry at the same time. But All kudos to JP Peterson and to the Sharks.
It was
an incredible win. Well done, the Bulls. Well done, the Lions. And URC, fantastic, fantastic. Come back after Investec Championship. We've got the one big round this weekend, and we'll be previewing that on Thursday. And then we're into a little bit of downtime in the Southern Hemisphere. When I talk Southern South Africa, because Super Rugby starts down under, that game of touch. We then have the Guinness Six Nations, and that's going to be fun to watch as well. But Zales, it's always a pleasure having you here.
Thanks, Manny.
I know you had to leave the big video sessions early to get here, wade through the traffic. But tell me now, is it going to be okay this week?
It's going to be okay. It's almost by 10.